Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Scaling Enterprise WordPress and OSS, a Do the Woo podcast show. We would like to thank our sponsor, Kinsta, who offers a high-performance hosting platform with managed WordPress hosting, powered by Google Cloud, ensuring fast load times and robust security. I'll tell you more about Kinsta later in the show, but let's get into the conversation.
Alrighty. Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Scaling WordPress, or Scaling Enterprise, I should say, WordPress and open source. I'm excited today to be joined by Brad, who you'll recognize from last week's show, and also returning host Kareem, who we haven't seen since prior to Christmas. So great to have you back, Kareem.
Thank you.
Before I hand over to Brad to talk about what we're going to be talking about on today's episode, if you haven't checked out last week's, or I think a couple of weeks ago now, definitely do so. Me and Brad did like a director's commentary of the State of Enterprise WordPress report that recently came out. Tons of interesting data in that, which we added some hopefully interesting flavor to as we scrolled through that. So check that out. Give us feedback if you have any. Brad, over to you. What we got on deck for today?
Yeah, we got a fun show today. Happy to see Kareem back. Happy to have the gang all back together. So today we're talking about, you know, what really lies ahead for Enterprise WordPress in 2025. There's a lot of trends out there, a lot of buzzwords, a lot of things I'm sure we're all seeing within our own agencies or reading about or researching or hearing at events. So I want to kind of talk about some of the trends we're seeing, hearing about, you know, incorporating within our agencies to bring to our clients. And we'd love feedback from anybody listening too, because of course, this is just trends and ideas of what we're seeing and what we're expecting, but it's by no means an exhaustive list. So that's the beautiful thing about technology on the web, right? It's always evolving, always changing. So what we think is going to happen, be interesting to recap at the end of the year or maybe early in 2026 and see how we did based on some of the things we're seeing. So some pretty big ideas, pretty big concepts that we want to kind of talk about. But let's dive in and see where we get to. You want to kick us off there, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we could think about this in like three major categories. I think the first one we all probably would throw on the board is AI. It's like barreling towards us at rapid speed. And most of us are probably playing around with it ourselves and starting to incorporate it into work. And I'm sure having lots of conversations with clients about it. But it kind of feels like this is the year that a bunch of real stuff's going to start to happen that's really going to impact the work we're doing. So thought it'd be good to talk a bit about that. There's a lot happening in the broader CMS space with the other proprietary platforms, this like evolution of headless, composable, hybrid, universal CMS. The whole industry's trying to like reconfigure and work all this stuff out. And WordPress is a part of that. So I thought it'd be good to talk about that. And then finally, we've got the WordPress roadmap, right? There's a bunch of stuff happening on deck for WordPress itself. We've got full site editing, which is like starting to make a splash, I think, in enterprise. We've got this like phase three of Gutenberg with collaborative editing, which I think we'll see this year. Maybe even phase four kicking off with multilingual. So that's probably worth talking about too. Yeah, so I thought we could categorize it into those buckets and probably dive in with AI as the major trend. I guess it's where to start with AI, right? It's coming towards us. I think a couple of things that have been becoming more real for me as the CEO of an agency doing enterprise WordPress. I think the first is just the degree to which AI already is affecting like software development, right? A large part of what HumanMade does is software engineering. And it feels like we're really starting to see a difference now in capability, efficiency between like software engineering teams that are using these AI code assistance tools and software engineering teams that aren't. So I thought maybe that's like the first thing that's really sticking out for me. And it feels like that's gonna get quite a lot more important this year, especially as some of these like next generation models, O3, comes out and they start to become better than the majority of programmers actually in the world of programming. So I wonder if either of you are seeing that and seeing your teams incorporate those tools, how you're thinking about that and how it might affect software engineering teams that we're all hiring and renting out.
I mean, you're right. AI is everywhere and in everything, whether it should be or not. I think we're seeing that massive saturation. And certainly on the development side, there's a lot of buzz because I think the big question is, what does it look like to be a developer a few years from now when tools like AI are getting so advanced and so good at generating code or creating full-blown web apps, you know, in a matter of minutes? So I think one of the challenges now is kind of sifting through the noise because like it's such a buzzword. And anytime something like AI comes out or some new technology that just grips the entire world, you know, 99% of it is garbage, right? So it's like trying to understand where the really good opportunities are, good tools are. And of course, you got the big players like Copilot, things like that, which I'm sure many of us are using or at least experimenting with. But there's so many additional services that may be amazing or may not be. And it's like really sifting through all of that to figure out what actually makes sense and what doesn't. And some of it's just kind of standing by and waiting to see who wins in some areas, right? Like who's the dominant player in this space or that can provide these tools. But I think at least from my perspective around coding, I look at AI right now as very much an assistant tool, not just for development, for everything. I use it a lot for contracts and language and even writing emails, right? It can save time just in response. I know what I want to say, but it can make it sound a lot better really quickly, right? So I think one of the concerns as an owner, I have agency owner and just building large scale websites for enterprise clients and clients of all sizes is just making sure we don't get so reliant on AI that we start to lose the skills that actually help us understand if what it's producing is accurate or not. You know, I've definitely dabbled with building plugins with AI, building setting screens in WordPress, doing some kind of API integrations, and I'm always curious to see what kind of code it produces. And I would say right now it's about 50-50 whether it does it the way I would expect it to do it or whether it uses some kind of older method. Good examples of settings, like if you have a basic settings screen in WordPress, is it going to use the proper settings API or is it going to just start doing direct database calls and inserting data into the option table and things like that? And I've seen that. And I feel like less experienced developers might say, well, this works because it does, but it's not really doing it the way that you should be doing it, right? So that's a big concern that I have. And certainly like my leadership team is just making sure that we're not overly reliant where we're not actually verifying what it's producing is accurate and correct. And I think that's going to be a big wake-up call for many agencies out there or just development companies that are relying so heavily on it and they think they can get by with less in terms of employees and skill levels that and they start producing a worse product.
Well, I am surprised to hear you say that last part, only in the sense that I completely agree. I think there's very quickly people went, oh, this is going to change coding completely and quickly. And this over-reliance on it's going to solve all my problems, it doesn't necessarily write efficient code. It doesn't necessarily actually solve the problem. You've seen some of the folks out there playing with these demos that at the end of the day, they don't work as well as the tried and true software that we've all used. At the same time, from a business sense, the customers are reacting very wildly differently. So within the enterprise, there's a lot of companies who have just said, you know what? This is moving too quickly, and we don't know the provenance, where all this data is coming from. We can't tell you if and when somebody's going to get sued over it and the training and all those wonderful things. So a lot of customers are just saying, you know what? No, you can't use it. And they're asking us even not to use it. So we have to come back and say, look, this is what we do use it for. It's actually saving you some money in QA and some automation and other things. But then still the humans are adapting it. What's interesting, though, is how it's affected us internally as an agency, where for years we've had a policy where we have a couple of developers on the bench at all times. So in case somebody's sick, in case somebody goes on leave, whatever, you need all hands on deck for something. And that's always been sort of the rotating R&D team. Since the speed up of AI, all we're doing is constantly trying new models. It is a literal daily thing that something comes out, that somebody says, let's go check this out. So we're spending so much time internally evaluating these tools, even if we're not going to use them, so that we know what's there and we know why we're not going to, that it's actually added quite a bit of internal cost, if you will, internal resource application of brain power. And I'm wondering how long can that industry keep up this daily pace before a lot of us, even within this industry, start going, right, we're not going to follow this daily pace. We're going to take a look at this on a cadence. We need to understand better where you want to go. Because as you were pointing out earlier, from one release to the next, they say so much changes. Do we have time to look at it between now and when the next release comes out, right? So I'm curious to see where this goes.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the fundamental challenges, right? I mean, it's moving so quickly that if you don't like take the time to try each new breakthrough as it happens, your like assumptions and assessments can just get out of date like so quickly. You know, you talk to someone who maybe had a look at it back when ChatGPT first came out and it was using GPT 3.5 and it was pretty janky and it was kind of interesting, but not that useful. And they build their assumptions around that. And it's like, we're in a fundamentally different place now. And maybe we're going to be in a fundamentally different place again in 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or 2 years.
As our resident historian, I'll say the big difference between now and the first internet bubble of the mid-90s was we didn't have the world's attention on us. So we could play around with things that were coming out on a weekly, monthly, whatever basis, and nobody was paying attention. Now, as Brad said, it's helping us write emails. It's helping us respond. It's helping us figure out what we want to do next. And can we keep up with that as an industry? It's interesting to see how this is going to affect us all.
Yeah, very much.
You know, one area I've actually really enjoyed using it from a coding and development perspective is rapid prototyping, right? Like I mentioned the example of building a settings page. Well, if I just want to rapidly prototype a settings page to show a client, not necessarily the underlying code, but like what we could potentially produce or how we could architect it, forget the code underneath the hood. I just want to show them what it looks like. And I can do that in a matter of, you know, a few seconds with a prompt. That is actually pretty powerful. Then it's also, once you get the buy-in, going back saying, okay, now we got to build this the proper way and make sure it's, you know, at scale. Because to your point, Kareem, like enterprise software is, I mean, it has to be exact, right? It has to be perfect. It has to be scalable and secure and performant. And it has to check all these boxes before it ever even gets to staging, let alone production. So the idea of just blindly trusting code that's produced, and I'm sure there's got to be some developers out there that get in trouble to try to, you know, not really tilt their hand that they're using AI, but this is how they're producing the code. I think, especially at the enterprise level, that's going to get caught pretty quickly because just how meticulous you have to be in scrutinizing every line of code that goes up to an enterprise level website.
Exactly. Yeah.
Something I've been tweeting a little bit about over the past few days, as I've been checking out this new OpenAI's deep research model, which is kind of the first like agent that I've actually found useful. Where you can say, go and produce me a report on the trends that you're seeing in the enterprise CMS space. And it will go and spend 30 minutes plus searching the internet and produce like a 5,000 word report on what it finds. And I mean, I've produced like 20 of these in the past 3 or 4 days, like genuinely very useful to me in my job as I'm trying to like think strategically and pull together all sorts of information. And it's like the first time I think where I could imagine hiring somebody to do a bunch of this research. I've done that in the past. And now I can just go and ask Deep Research to produce this report for me.
So you're using the Deep Research product?
Yeah.
So question for you. Have you tried it with any of the other models and see what you get?
Yeah, so I've tried Google's, also called Deep Research. I found that just generally to be quite a bit more shallow in terms of its actual research.
The reason I ask is because at what point do we start blindly just accepting what it's giving us, right? And as an industry, and, you know, that's why internally we're talking to our developers about question everything, right? Don't accept its answers, you know, and really try to use this as a tool to speed things up. But at the same time, also use it as a tool to check your own thought processes. So if we stay incredulous, if we stay hungry for the answer, I think it's a good use of our time and energy. If we're just sort of accepting what it's giving us, that's the problem. Like Brad said, then you have to go and actually build it, or then you have to go verify these sources and that kind of stuff. It's just interesting to see how, especially some of the less experienced developers are just sort of relying on it.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine we just will see a ton of that because it's ultimately, it is just so much easier. And so people are going to take the path of least resistance. I guess the question is, will be, do these things get good enough, fast enough, you know, the problems with hallucination and making stuff up that we saw earlier on become less of a problem over time. I mean, the thing I've liked about this deep research versus just asking like GPT-4 or DeepSeek or something is that it's searching the internet and then summarizing the information it finds. So it's not producing that content straight from its training data. And also it's sourcing everything it's saying so that you can then click through to the sources. So that's kind of helpful. But it definitely was the first time. I mean, I've heard people talking about agents for quite a while as being like the next frontier. And it's the first time where I have really been able to like make the leap and think, gosh, yeah, if there are agents that you can say, go and produce me a photo gallery section on my website, and it can go off and click around. I mean, we've also seen OpenAI's Operator where it's spinning up a virtual browser and clicking around. That stuff, that one's a little bit less useful because it's a little bit more gimmicky at the moment. But I feel, you know, they're starting to be the building blocks of some of these things that I really can actually start to see how that could pretty fundamentally change a lot of the CMS work that happens.
Could even overtake user testing, like you mentioned. If it's smart enough to go to a site, click around, kind of navigate the site, try to find maybe a certain piece of information, you've given it a challenge. Now you start to replace some of the tools and some of the ideas and services that we use now, like just straight up user testing, or even just tracking what users are doing on your website. What are they clicking on? Where are they going? How are they finding your information? So, but being able to send a robot basically to your website to do that could be very interesting. But the question is, it going to do it in the way that a user would, or is it going to do it in the way that a computer would? And that's going to be the big difference, right? If can it actually act like a human, you know, traversing the website? Because if not, then the data is pretty much irrelevant, right? Because that's what we're testing against, is how users use the website. But I would imagine that it will get to that point, if it's not already, to where that data could get hugely valuable.
And in a world where we've moved from analytics to deep analytics to CDPs, I love to see where this goes in the next years around helping AI helping us personalize and customize the website in real time based on the guest's journey on the website.
Yeah, I love that idea. Hyper-personalization, predictive UX, some buzzwords that you're probably going to hear, especially going into this year if you haven't already. But like the idea of like hitting a landing page, an AI agent behind the scenes can kind of custom tailor that based on you, the user, and what it knows about you to make that as relevant as possible. I got to imagine every company out there would be very interested in that, right? Because now it's not just, here's a wall of text that we hope speaks to as many people as possible. It's actually got to modify that wall of text so it's talking to Kareem or Tom or Brad. A little bit scary in some ways if it starts to understand more things about me than I realize when I'm on some random, you know, website. But that is the direction we're going. That personalization is not new. That's something that's been a big part of enterprise and websites for many years now. But being able to hook in that AI agent to it, that is something that's going to get super interesting to see what especially larger organizations start to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's when we get into the territory of it starting to become difficult to, you know, picture exactly how this stuff is going to fundamentally change what websites are, what it means to build a website, what it means to use a website, which I think at the moment we've got this couple of years ahead of us of these are tools that help us do what we do better. And that's going to be pretty exciting. And there's lots of like learning about them and adopting them, and probably, you know, those that adopt them the most effectively are going to see the benefit of that. But further out, it starts to become a little more nebulous as to really what this is going to mean for the web as a whole.
If you are looking for hosting via cloud servers for your client sites, consider checking out Kinsta. With their container technology, you are assured of no shared resources. Plus, you get global CDN, edge caching, and Cloudflare Enterprise for all your sites. It doesn't stop there, though. Auto backup, staging, plug-in vulnerability alerts, and uptime monitoring comes with 24/7 support that you can expect from humans. Add to this, for agencies, look into their partner programs with some nice extras, plus an account manager and custom plans to meet the needs of your client's sites. All this and more, just head over to kinsta.com.
Maybe that's a nice segue, though, into our CMS DXP industry trends topic. Personalization has been a big trend for the last several years. And so I know, actually, Kareem, you were recently at a CMS conference. So maybe you could talk a little bit about the trends that you picked up on there as you were talking, I think, mixing with a whole bunch of people from all the different CMS providers.
Absolutely. At the beginning of January, I was lucky enough to be invited by Boy & Company, who has the annual CMS kickoff in January every year in Florida, went down to beautiful St. Petersburg, and it was an amazing congregation, proprietary and open source and other CMSs. This is the same series of events that last summer had a great conversation with Dries about where Starshot was, that's now become the Drupal CMS. So there's a gentleman there who is known as the AEM guy, who has spent 25 years really honing his experience with where that suite of products has been coming from and going. And so you get a really healthy mix of people from different conversations. And while 2024 was the year of what they called universal content, and how do you get content to play well with multiple CMSs, this year really was not only about AI, but also about personalization, and also about what's going on with basically how can some of these play well together. It's a conference full of competitors. It's a conference full of folks who are all selling the same thing in their own different flavors, but you really get a good mix of understanding really what's going on, and it's healthy conversations because there's no customers in the room. So you really get a chance to understand where they're coming from and where they want to go, which sort of brings me back. I'm not going to cover some of the things that you guys covered in the last show because there's some really good content there. And if you want to hear about that, please check it out in our feed if you haven't done so already. But open source continues to be preferred. Really quite, you know, I think the number you guys had was 58% of respondents report using open source to power their sites. 83% feel the benefits of open source outweigh those of proprietary. That's what we see in our world. When I was speaking to them down in Florida, of course, they're like, well, you know, the weakness of open source is it's not one throat to choke. Well, the worries around open source are you don't have the same level of support and roadmap and other things, which we're going to get to in this conversation later on. But they also can't innovate as fast as we do. So that's why you find a lot of customers having multiple CMS strategies. I think it was 60% in 2020. That's gone up to 85%. And then basically with all this multiple CMS strategy and no clear winners, it seems like while we're still seeing evolutions of headless and composable hybrid, that kind of stuff, we're not seeing deep funding of one model. There's been a couple of acquisitions and mergers lately and other things, and we'll always continue to see that. But what I think is that there's a real opportunity for open source from everything that I heard down there. And really, WordPress continues to surprise everybody. You know, we've always had the brand problem about what is WordPress. So if you say it in a room of 20 people, you'll have 22 answers of what WordPress is, from a blog to an enterprise product. And the bottom line is that's actually helped us in our industry. That's helped us and our agencies and the folks out there to really mold WordPress to what it should be. And I think a lot of those proprietary systems are trying to figure out how do they do composable? How do they do modular when they've spent so much time trying to be so horizontal? So I was doing a little bit of poking myself as they were poking us about some of the things that are going on in our neck of the woods around supply chain security and stuff. But it was a really good.
I think it's a really good sign or a sign of the times or the progress, I suppose, that WordPress has made as an enterprise CMS, that like we're finally in these spaces. You know, like you said, that WordPress has been the market leader in terms of CMS market share, but it's not been well represented in these spaces. And so actually the level of knowledge about WordPress, even within the rest of the CMS ecosystem, is like surprisingly lower than you might expect. And I found the same as you. When I go to these kinds of events, you spend quite a lot of time correcting misinformed assumptions and like explaining the basics of what WordPress does now, how it works, how it's structured, the size of the ecosystem, often to the surprise of the people you're talking to. But I think that's one of the challenges we had, I think, for many years, especially as like a lot of funding came into the CMS space and we saw all these new entrants with a lot of VC money, and they really set the agenda in terms of what the trends were. And WordPress often just wasn't really a part of those conversations. We were like playing catch up. How do we show that we can do headless, rather than being in the room where we decide that headless is going to be a trend or not. And I see that as starting to shift, that WordPress now is well represented in these kinds of CMS industry forums. And that's a really good thing.
Absolutely.
I like seeing that growth in multi-CMS environments. I mean, jumping 25%, you know, since 2020, from 60% to 85%. This is an area we've seen a lot of success with, where the primary flagship website software, you know, is very much a behemoth. It's massively customized. It's been around forever. The idea of replacing it is just not even in the realm of possibility for these companies. But the realizing is they can prop up WordPress right alongside their proprietary platform. And with the block editor and the enhancements there around producing really rich content, blast off landing pages, marketing campaigns, blogs, newsrooms, you know, in a matter of days or weeks, whereas their other system might take much, much longer if it's even capable of doing some of this stuff. So, you know, I've always said it's a great secondary CMS when your primary CMS just isn't on the table to be replaced. Great. That's fine. That's what it does. And it does it well. And it's done it well for a long time. You can still look at other opportunities with WordPress and how it can help accelerate those online campaigns. And that's where I'm sure a lot of this growth in this number is coming from.
True, true.
I know you also spoke at the CMS kickoff, I think building on a post that you wrote, which I'm sure listeners will be aware of. It caused quite a stir, I think, or perhaps the follow-on from that post caused a bit of a stir within the ecosystem. Yeah, and so maybe now's a good opportunity for you to maybe explain to the points you were making in that post and talk a little bit about the fallout since.
I'd love to, because I feel like it's been a little bit blown out of proportion by just, you know, the Twitterverse and the socialverse. Because honestly, if somebody does parse out my post, they'll see that I was not taking any sides in any existing altercations between anybody. I have no dogs in those fights. But being in the CMS space for 30 years, customers are concerned about supply chain security. Customers are concerned about a roadmap and understanding where that'll be. And again, I'm very opinionated because I've always only just worked in the enterprise. I don't work in small business. I don't work in the medium business or sort of the personal website space. So really, for me, the post was to say, look, we need to focus on these things if we want to keep the enterprise happy. And what are those things? Just real quick. Number one, supply chain security. We've been speaking as a community for years around actually signing where the source comes from, around the idea of making sure we know what's valid. There's been a lot of core contributors who've worked on different ideas around it, and there's all sorts of open tickets, blah, 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 which is inside baseball. But the bottom line is that the enterprise really wants to feel like they can rely on something, and that's why they use closed source proprietary systems most of the time. For us to be taken as seriously as Red Hat is versus Fedora, we need to do that. And there's an opportunity here to actually focus on, quite literally, taking a page out of something that's worked for over 30 years in the Linux and open source world around package management, that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is that we need to define this roadmap sort of as an open web's operating system. Matt's said this for years, and he's absolutely right. It's been characterized as a fight. There's no fight here. Matt is a visionary. He's the co-founder. I only applaud all the time he's put into this, and he's tried to be the most benevolent he could for a long time. There is no fork. There is no spoon. Really, what we talked about is having a safer distribution strategy around WordPress. And I think it's best for all of us if we do that. And we want to help. We want to, as a community, we want to help. We want to get involved in this. I'm staying away from all the other controversy just to say we need to focus on the reason why we were just talking earlier in this same episode. Open source is a hub for innovation. Our customers see it as an opportunity to not be tied to the roadmaps of those proprietary systems. So if we continue to be modular, if we continue to create an area where people can really play and do a sandbox and easily add things on. I want to remind everybody, one of the main reasons most of our customers anyway came to WordPress in the first place was the brilliant base concept of plugins, core, and themes being separated. It's a brilliant concept, and nobody's come up with anything better. We need to double down on this. And lastly, I'll just add, focusing on data ownership, privacy, accessibility, we can lead the industry in this. Proprietary platforms have a much harder time explaining this. And because of their architecture, their idea of data ownership and privacy, it's harder for them to do than we could set up for our customers. All three of us have had customers where we've done very extensive work in customizing data privacy and data ownership for our customers and their website guests. We need to lead. And to lead, I'm not saying that we need to replace or we need to do any of those things that have been said by others. I'm saying we need to work together and we need to broaden our concept. It's okay for us to have a couple of multiple working groups that are really focused on different aspects of this. Because some of the things that Gutenberg does that really compete with Wix and Squarespace are amazing. At the same time, the work that our companies and Tom, your company, helped found around some of the REST API stuff, it's the best possible thing for the WordPress world for us to advance that even further. And it's okay if those two groups work in parallel, but aren't in lockstep. That's the concept of my post. And we're hoping still to have a really good conversation about it.
All right.
Thanks, Kareem. I mean, one thing that does just remind me of, actually, is that, you know, this opportunity we have around security, I think one of the most interesting stats from the State of Open Source report, which Red Hat put out every year, is that in the past couple of years, we've seen actually security be like grow into now one of the major reasons that enterprise companies are choosing open source. That's which totally used to be, you know, the opposite, right? We used to have to defend the security of open source quite heavily, and that was seen as a real risk. Now that's actually seen as one of the strengths of open source. And so that speaks to that opportunity and I guess the risk of undermining that. So, okay, very good. Well, I think we should wrap up with WordPress roadmap. There's a bunch of cool stuff happening in the WordPress roadmap coming down the line. So Brad, why don't you kick us off with that section?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So full site editing, of course, is continuing to evolve within WordPress. You know, I was actually looking up when full site editing, FSE, you might see it referenced as, when the first release that included it, because it's been an evolution, right? It's been built over time. It's actually been about 2 years ago, which I take that back. It's been 3 years ago, 2022. In January, version 5.9, which I don't think you could actually do full site editing, but I think it laid the groundwork for it. So again, built over time, but I guess I hadn't realized it went back quite that far, but it's definitely become more of a polished product. Still some more work to go, but it's certainly something that I think more companies are exploring, if not already using. There's certainly more themes that are supporting it. And really taking that block editor experience to the full website, right? So allowing you to control things like header, footer, and global styles and layouts and beyond just the content piece of the website. So certainly continue to see that continue to grow. And then actively they're in phase three of the real-time collaboration, which think about how you work with maybe coworkers or friends on a Google Doc, right? So you're all in the same doc together. You can work on the same doc without very in real time, see what people are editing, what they're adjusting. Imagine that in a WordPress space, especially for like a large media organization. I mean, that is an absolute game changer because Google Doc is definitely a part of their content workflow for many organizations because it's really one of the easiest ways to collaborate. So being able to kind of bring that in-house into WordPress, honestly, is going to be a massive game changer, in my opinion, for any organization that just has a lot of content writers and is producing a lot of content. It's just going to make life so much easier. Keep it in the tool you're using, keep it in the tool you're publishing with versus working with Google and copying and pasting and things like that. And of course, phase four will be multilingual, which is bringing that multilingual capability directly into the core of WordPress, which a little bit controversial just because there's a lot of products, tried and true products that are out there that I'm sure we've all used that can handle this. I don't think it eliminates those, but it's yet to be seen, right? In what state it comes out in, how it works, how powerful it is, if it's a jumping off point for something a larger product, or if it actually is pulling in a lot of that functionality that most people need. But just being able to make WordPress more multilingual support in the core I do think it is a big win for WordPress because while you can easily change text within the site and translate it, just given those capabilities without having to pull in external tools is going to be a big win. So a lot going on there in the WordPress development still. Any thoughts around how these particular roadmap items are ready or are going to affect enterprise in the coming year or years?
Real-time collaboration paired with AI instant translations, complete game changer for our customers. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's going to be interesting to see whether the rapid progress that's being made in AI translation actually impacts multilingual as a phase four item, because I feel like it's becoming less necessary actually to do so much multilingual in a world where AI is translating everything at the edge for everybody in real time.
It's getting good. I mean, remember the old kind of quick and dirty way to do multilingual was incorporate Google Translate on the page, which was not great, right? It got the point across, whatever the content was, but it was by no means translated accurately. So if you were speaking those languages or could read those languages, you knew it was a hot mess. But yeah, AI has come a long way in those translations. Like you said, a lot of that's just baked into browsers now or extensions you could add into your browser. So, you know, you can hit any website and Chrome will pop up. Hey, you want to translate this to English? Yes, I do. I absolutely do. So, but the idea of having that content in WordPress, obviously there's some massive benefits that people can find you in other ways.
But also the enterprise can adjust to those translations. As we all know, a lot of our customers have exact lexicons and vocabularies they want to use. Right now, they don't control that with those browser extensions, right? And with Google Translate. With this, they'll be able to basically hone their translations real time. And that's powerful, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a huge upgrade for small teams that are trying to manage a lot of multilingual content. But for large enterprise teams where they already have per country marketing teams, they're not just translating one set of content, they're perhaps putting out completely different campaigns per locale or something. AI has much less impact for sure, because that's all essentially unique content. That's interesting. I mean, on the full site editing front, I mean, I think the first thing is, like you say, we're a couple of years in actually. I think generally we've seen slower adoption of full site editing than we did of Gutenberg's like first phases. With the block editor for content. Like, I think that was adopted very early by most of the enterprise agencies and was pretty much, you know, pretty quickly a pretty nice upgrade from how most of us were building sites prior to that with a lot of custom meta boxes ultimately. And whereas I think this paradigm shift for full site editing and the side editor has taken a little bit longer to make its way into these like enterprise site building workflows. But it feels like it's starting to happen now. This last couple of releases have added a lot of like feature maturity from what I've seen. So that now you've got the control you need to be able to give the flexibility in the areas you might want it for a marketing team that you're building a CMS for, but locked down in the way that enterprise customer is going to need it to be, so that they've not just got complete freedom to shoot themselves in the foot, as we say. But yeah, I wonder if that's kind of what you two are seeing too. It's felt slower.
Yeah, I'm wondering if, I mean, to that last point about, you know, like giving control and power, but not too much, I think that's the biggie for enterprise, right? Like, and I think that's the big question mark, at least from my perspective, is will they fully take hold of full site editing, knowing that there's additional work that needs to go in to make sure, you know, you're not giving some lower level employee access to change out your entire header or footer globally across your entire site accidentally, right? So then it's also justifying budgets and time that need to be spent for that, just to kind of scale that back. I'm curious, because I know on the page builder side, which is comparable, because that's what page builders have been doing for years, that was always a major concern for our clients in the enterprise, because, oh, I had to invest money to lock this down more. You know, sometimes it's a harder sell. But I'm curious if, as being a core product or a core feature, if over time, because it is an educational thing, right? FSE and just getting people comfortable with it, just like the block editor was. I'm curious if we'll see more adoption in the enterprise level, or if they're just going to completely stay away from it and say, you know what, it's great for content, but we really don't need that level of customization globally.
Yeah, that's basically what we've seen. I mean, especially again, for those like small marketing teams that are trying to do a lot with a little, I found it to be, found that to be quite a big upgrade to them. You can ship them a site that they can get in and start building out sections themselves much more quickly. And like, it's another kind of foundational shift in the amount of stuff they can achieve without having to go back to a developer, which small marketing teams love because having to go back to a developer is slow. And so those have been pretty nice upgrades, I think.
All right.
Have we kind of reached a natural end there? It feels like maybe we have.
I think so.
We've covered a lot.
Yeah, great show.
That feels like it could be a good place to wrap. Great to have you back, Kareem.
Thank you.
And good to chat to you again, Brad.
Absolutely.
And thanks, everybody, for listening and watching. This is going on YouTube too, so maybe you've been watching us. We're still getting used to it. And we'll see you on the next one.
See you on the next one.
Hey, Bob WP again. Thanks for listening, and thanks to our sponsor, Kinsta. If you've yet to subscribe, you can find us on your favorite pod app on the Fediverse. And to get all things Do the Woo at dothewoo.io/subscribe. So until the next time, take care.